Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Day, Minister of the 12th Apostolic Shadow Church and Congregation, Mount Zion, 12 down in Libertyville, Texas. Today is November 26, 2016, our sister, 27, 2020. We will start our second service on the Sabbath day with a song entitled, A Sweet Peace, the Gift of Yahweh's Love. There comes to my heart one sweet strain, a glad and a joyous refrain. I sing it again and again, sweet peace, the gift of your love. Wonderful gift from above. Oh, wonderful, wonderful peace. Sweet peace, the gift of your love. To Yash on the cross, peace was made. My death, my death was all paid. You know how the foundation is laid for peace, the gift of your love. Peace, peace, sweet peace, wonderful gift from above. Oh, wonderful, wonderful peace. Sweet peace, the gift of your love. When Yahshua the King I had crowned, my heart with his peace did abound. In him the rich blessing I found. Sweet peace, the gift of your love. Peace, peace, sweet peace, wonderful gift from above. Oh, wonderful, wonderful peace, sweet peace, the gift of your love. And yes, for peace I have died, and as I keep close by his side, there's nothing but peace that betide. Sweet peace, the gift of your love. Peace, peace, sweet peace, wonderful gift from above. Oh, wonderful, wonderful peace. Sweet peace, the gift of your love. That which is to be during the time of the end, we're going to do Time to Greetings, Volume 2, Number 42. It says, in order to know what takes place during the time of the end, we must first know where the time of the end begins and ends. We must know both ends if we are to know what takes place between now to find when the time of the end begins. Let us turn to Daniel 11:40. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him, like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries, and shall overflow the Passover and Passover. In the verse of the scripture, there are five clues to the carefully noted, Number one, that the war mentioned in this verse is the last conflict between the two kings recorded in the prophecy of Daniel 11. Number two, that it is the losing war for the king of the south, which are your Arabs, your Muslims, That's the way the king of the south will sit up in his top in the beginning, with the Arabs in charge. Number three, that it is fought at the time of the end, not before, in or after. Number four, that the king of the north becomes great, while the king of the south declines. Now, the king of the south today are your Muslims that are in charge of the White House at Washington, D.C. That's your king of the south for today, Obama. Now, watch this. As the king of the north, we've always learned in the beginning, or should have, if we have studied this subject at all, we would have learned that pagan Rome, with the Catholic but the Catholic Pope sitting at the head of Rome today, the Catholic Church, it represents the King of the North. And we know the King of the North, the Pope and Obama, has met here the last 2 years. They have met in person. The Pope came here to see Obama at the White House, and he gave him some instructions. And Obama gave him some instructions in return. So they both told lies at one table, and they both come to their end, and none to help them because of this. But that's for a little further on down the road. It says, number four, that the king of the north becomes great, while the king of the south declines. And number five, that the statement, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, very obviously marks the beginning of the time of the end. Okay, so we know that this conflict is emerging, that is right in front of us, and we know that the man that represents the king of the north right now is King Cyrus, and a typical King Cyrus, Donald Trump. He's engaging this king of the south right now, even as we speak. He may not be the king of the north that's represented necessarily in Daniel 11, but he definitely is the king of the north that came out of the north. Cyrus is one in the type. Okay. If therefore we find the year this prophesied war began, we shall have established the beginning of the time of the end. Since the king of the south pushes at the king of the north, it follows that the king of the south is the aggressor. So, the president of the United States, the Arab leader of our country, the president of the United States, and he thinks he's the president of the world, and so therefore he has been the aggressor. Okay, using the United Nations as a fulcrum point to launch his campaign as the ruler of the world. And this has been going on for 8 years with the Obama administration. It follows that the king of the south is the aggressor, feels himself strong to attack. He nevertheless loses out, and the king of the north overruns him. Becomes great, takes many countries, including the following. Daniel 11:41. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. Here it is seen that the king of the north grows very great during the time of the end. He takes the glorious land, Palestine, and besides taking many other countries, he also takes Edom and Moab and Ammon, the Arab countries, parentheses, the Arab countries. Okay, so the king of the north, he takes Palestine, which is your Gaza Strip today, where the Palestinians are assigned that portion of the coastline of Israel. They're on the Mediterranean. They're the Palestinians. The king of the north takes them. And besides taking many other countries, he also takes Edom and Moab and Ammon, parentheses, the Arab countries. Now, keep in mind that Edom, Moab, and Ammon represents the nations that evolved from Lot, the nephew of Abraham. Lot was also an Hebrew, Israelite. And by his two daughters, he raised up Edom, Moab, Ammon. He raised up the Arab countries that opposed the descendants of Abraham through Isaac, the Israel's countries. So that's what Lot ended up doing by turning and going into Sodom and Gomorrah, choosing the wrong city to go into and the wrong direction to go. He raised up the Arab nations. Lot did. Okay? And which nevertheless, in the time escaped out of his hand, freed themselves, moreover, says the scripture, Daniel 11:42. And he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. This definitely shows that in the time of the end, one great power, which has been ruling over these countries, among which are included Egypt and Palestine, loses them and becomes small, while another power takes them and waxes even greater. For centuries, the Ottoman Empire ruled these countries. And history records that the first Turkish reverses on land occurred in about 1699. Ever since, Turkey has been declining and the Christian nations gaining. Well, what is the Turkey then? Turkey is Arab nation. And they was appointed as the overseers of the land of Israel up to 1699, and then they went into a decline. Turkey has been declining and the Christian nations gaining, but it is Great Britain in particular that has taken the countries mentioned by name in this prophecy. She is one who has taken many other countries beside these and has waxed great during the decline of the Ottoman Empire. In other words, you could say the decline of the Arab Empire, the King of the South. Obviously, therefore, these historic facts, besides others we have not mentioned, prove that rising from the jungles south of the Palestine, the Ottoman Empire next after the Ptolemies holds the title King of the South, and the nations king north of Palestine, the Christian nations rising from the Roman Empire and now Great Britain in particular, hold the title King of the North. And since the decline of the Ottoman Empire, the Arab Empire, the King of the South, began in 1699, and the growth of the British Empire, that's King of the North, began during the same time, then in the beginning of the 18th century, is therefore the beginning of the time of the end. Now this is one of the beginning of the times of the end. This was the beginning of the time of the end for the King of the South. Okay? And finally, since we now see that the wars of the Mohammedans, that's your Arabs, with the Christian nations, that's your King of the North, Catholics. When you say Christian in this respect, the King of the North is Rome, Catholicism. Okay, so when you say Christian, because the Catholics stole that name Christian, and they applied it to themselves. So when it says Christian nations begin to take over the southern nations, the Ottoman Empire, the Arab nation, then you're saying the Catholic Church, the King of the North, is gaining momentum and taking away the power of the King of the South. Are mentioned in prophecy with special emphasis that Egypt and Palestine during the time of the end acceded to the King of the North as part of his trophies. These kings are positively identified, and the fall of the one with the growth of the other after the Treaty of Karlowitz in 1699, by which Mustafa Number 2 agreed to renounce his claims upon Transylvania and a large part of Hungary, to give up Mareas, M-A-R-E-A, Maria, unto the Venetians, to restore Polalia, and the Ukraine unto Poland, and to leave Azov to the Russians. Okay, that's taken from the 12th Century Encyclopedia, Volume 6, page 247. Certainly establishes the beginning of the time of the end. Okay, that says Daniel 11:43-44. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. These verses reveal that after taking Egypt and Palestine, the king of the north enters into another war, not on account of the king of the south, not with Turkey, the Arab, but rather due to rumors from the east and from the north that trouble him. This caused him to go forth with great fury to destroy many. But he conquers nothing worth mentioning, and according unto the verse that follows, he is afterwards threatened and coming unto his end. This particular war, therefore, brings the first reverses to the king of the north since the reverses of the king of the south in 1699. Germany and Russia from the north, also Japan from the east, the rumors which put Great Britain and her allies into the World War II, are therefore the tidings which brought the war, and which, though supposedly the war was won, weakened rather than strengthened the British Empire. Daniel 11:45. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end and none to help him. The only portion of Daniel 11 yet to be fulfilled in this verse, the last of the chapter, and since these prophecies are made to be understood only when they are being fulfilled, or after fulfilling, verse 45 is not as clear as we should like to have it, consequently concerning the place of his tabernacles and his end, also as to whether another Christian power shall inherit the title King of the North. Now, this comes along with antitypical Cyrus, Donald Trump. He represents another Christian power outside of the King of the North, the Pope, the Catholic Church. He's going to inherit the title King of the North. Before verse 45 is fulfilled, only time itself will positively portray the whole truth. The thing that inspiration makes altogether clearer is the fact that the king's next stand is his end, while all look and listen, but none come to his help. Since we have established the time of the beginning of the time of the end, let us now establish the end of the time of the end. For the light on this subject, we turn to Revelation 19:19-21. And I saw the beast and the chains of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse. That's Yahshua having come on the white horse with his great army from heaven and against his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast, and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone, and the remnant were slain with the sword of him that sat upon the horse, which sword proceeded out of his mouth, and all the fowls were filled with their flesh. The beast, the false prophet, and the remnant are here mentioned. Who are they? Okay, this is a good question here. It says, the beast, the false prophet, and the remnant are here mentioned. Who are they? Okay, this Revelation 13, verse 18, identifies the beast. It's the number of a man. For one thing, it is a man. And that man, as we understand today, is Obama. Now, that's going to leave it at that right now. And the false prophet, that would be his vice president, Joe Biden, which is he's a Jesuit. He is a member of the Knights of the Round Table of the Catholic Church. He's one of the Jesuit order. That's the mouthpiece for the false prophet Obama. That represents the beast, 666. then Revelation 13:18. And then the remnant, those who that are left are cast to the lake of fire. Those that were deceived and taken the mark of the beast that was offered unto them by this here man that had the 666 number, Obama, and he offered that number through them to the Obamacare that he forced down everybody's neck that he could illegally. He didn't get no legal backing of the Congress or the Senate to do it, and he never got one vote from the Republicans to do it. So therefore, he did an end run with some shenanigans, and he managed to, through executive order, make it a rule of law, not a validated law of Congress. And so therefore, he took and put a number on this here Obamacare, and as many as he could deceive in taking it, that's how many is going to be thrown in the lake of fire with him in Revelation 19:20. Since the beast and the prophet are special world entities, the remnant, those that are left, represent the rest of the unrepented world, sympathetic with the beast and the prophet. Those that are sympathetic with Obama and the vice president, Joe Biden, and the mystery Dalai woman in Revelation 17:5, Hillary Clinton, the Clintonites, and the Bushites, those are sympathetic with all of those dynasties. The Bush dynasties, the Clinton dynasties, the Obama dynasties, all of those three dynasties that people are from, that are dedicated to, they're going to be suffer the same destruction with them. For the destruction of the prophet, the beast, and the remnant, therefore, is the end of the world. Okay. Let's do that again. For the destruction of the prophet, the beast, and the remnant, therefore, is in the time of the end of the world, in the 12th parabolic hour, and that's the hour that we're in right now, the terminus of the time of the end. Besides these verses of Scripture, the 12th or the 20th chapter of Revelation reveals that with this last pre-millennial event and the drama of sin, the millennial reign of Yahshua and the church began, Revelation 20, verse 1 to 3, and the end of which time shall arise all who had no part in the first resurrection, Revelation 20, verse 5 and 6. Now we have seen that the time of the end spans from the commencement of the decline of the Ottoman Empire unto the end of the world, and that the end of the world is the end of all people. But the church, those who lived and reigned with Yahshua 8,000 years. Let us now see what takes place between these two signposts. We shall continue Daniel's prophecy through the 12th chapter, verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince who standeth for the children of thy people. There shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even at that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And at that time, that is, at the time the king of the north comes unto his end, Daniel 11:45, shall Michael stand up and deliver his people, the 144,000 church, that's his purified, that's a section of the Adventist church, that's the first fruits that come, that the Adventist church produced. She did produce a purified group of people, all right enough. Well, she had 75 years to do it. She's had about 75 years to do it. She finally will accomplish that. What else it takes place? Daniel 12:2. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Here is projected a resurrection of a mixed multitude, wicked and righteous, foolish and wise. This resurrection, then, is not the premillennial first resurrection, nor the postmillennial resurrection of the wicked, Revelation 20, verse 5 and 6, but a special time. If the wise who turn many unto righteousness are of the resurrected in this special resurrection, and if they shine as the stars forever and ever, then this special resurrection takes place in the probationary time, Daniel 12:4. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even unto the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. For the understanding of the book of the words of it were to be sealed unto the time of the end, during the time of the end. Now, that's the time that we're in now. Therefore, in this 12th periodic call, it began in 2002, 2003. Therefore, the book was to be opened. Knowledge was also to increase. Moreover, many were to run to and fro, that is, communication was to speed up greatly. All this we have already seen takes place during the time of the end. Thus, there is no room for doubt as to the time in which we are living, the time of the end. Daniel 12, 8-10, And I heard, but I understood not. Then said I, O my master, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Here inspiration itself explained that no one, not even Daniel himself, could possibly understand the book before the time of the end. And two, while the wicked were to continue doing wickedly, many were to be purified, made white, and tried. That is, the purification of the church, the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, was to take place during the time of the end. In the words of the prophet Malachi, the cleansing of the sanctuary is preceded by this announcement of Malachi 3:1-3. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Yahshua whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Yahweh, Yahshua of hosts. But who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like fuller's soap, and he shall sit as a refiner and purify silver. He shall purify the sons of Levi, and purge him as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahshua an offering in righteousness. Rather than say sanctuary, inspiration in this instance says temple. And rather than say cleansing, it uses the terms refining and purifying. The Apostle Peter, though, chooses to call the cleansing of the sanctuary judgment in the house of Yahweh. So cleansing is interchangeable with the word judgment. I went through the first judgment of the living at the house of Yahweh, first in 2002, starting at the Passover. Ancient men before the house, I was there. Matter of fact, I was classified as one of those ancient men before the house. But I came through the judgment. The number one leader, did not come through the judgment. They're at the Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, the third branch of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Okay, rather than say sanctuary, inspiration in this instance says temple. Okay. 1 Peter 4:17, For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of Yahweh. And if the first beginning of this, what shall be the end of them that obey not the gospel of the Yahweh? And if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the unrighteous and the sinner appear? In the parable, however, Yahshua explains the cleansing of the sanctuary thus, Malachi 13:30, that both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest I will say unto the reapers, gather ye together first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Okay, so when we started the judgment of the living, the first bundle that was bound was at Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, 2002-2003. Well, let's continue on here. And if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the unrighteous and the sinner appear? In the parable, however, Yahshua explains the cleansing of the sanctuary thus. He says, Matthew 13:30, Let both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest, I will say unto the reapers, gather ye together, first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, gather the wheat in my barn. Here it is made clear that in this instance, the wicked among the righteous are likened to tares, and the time of the cleansing itself, the judgment is likened unto a harvest, but that the cleansing itself is likened unto a separation of wheat and tares. Again, in verse 47 and 48, Yahshua draws a parallel between the church, a net the people is likened to fish, and the purification until separation. Whereas in Matthew 25, he calls the purified church the kingdom of Yahweh. And the people, like virgins, and the people he likens unto virgins, and the cleansing he illustrates by a door which lets the wise but keep out the foolish, lets in the wise. But his second parable of Matthew 25, the separation, we are told, is to be like a matter, or like a master who comes to reckon with his servants, those who have done nothing good for the advancement of his kingdom, who have not traded with and increased his talents, Matthew 25:27, are cast out. They're to gnash their teeth in the outer darkness, Matthew 25:30. In his third parable, the separation, he likens to a shepherd who separates the goats from the sheep, sinners from the saints. The goats are condemned to die, but the sheep are given the right to the kingdom. For the prophet Ezekiel, however, explains the cleansing of the sanctuary from still another angle. Ezekiel 9:2, verse 4 and 7. He cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man had a slaughter weapon in his hand. And one man among them was clothed with the linen, with a writer's ink on by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. And Yahweh said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and cry, for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. And to the others he said in mine hearing, go ye after him through the city, and smite, let not your eyes spare, neither have you pity. Say utterly, old and young, both maids and little children, and come, and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. And that sanctuary, when this judgment began, was at Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center. Brother Johnson was the prophet, the head of the candlestick there at Gilead Center, third feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So therefore, Brother Johnson was the last prophet appointed during the time of the sixth seal and the judgment of the dead, closing out the judgment of the dead. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. That started with Brother Johnson, the prophet. They started with the prophet. And then they went back down the line, went through the whole Adventist Church throughout the whole world. Of course, the rest of the ancient men were not prophets. It's just the head one. Okay. Then they began to ancient men which were before the house, and he said unto them, defile the house and fill the courts of the slain. Go ye forth. And they went forth and slew in the city. Besides this vivid illustration, inspiration through the prophet, Daniel reveals that the sanctuary is to be cleansed not only from sinners, but from doctrinal error too. For one angel inquired, Daniel 8:13-14-17, how long shall the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, under 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Understand, O Son of Man, for the time of the end shall be the vision. The day, the desolation, also the sanctuary and the host, pertain both to the doctrines and the people. Both are to be cleansed. And the angel explained that the cleansing of the sanctuary, cleansing it from both error and hypocrisy, takes place after the 2,300 days, during the time, time of the end. So the time of the end officially began in 1844, and it goes through the 12th hour. So you have three parabolic hours assigned for the time of the end. That's the last three on the 24-hour time clock. The last three parabolic hours also takes in the seventh and eighth movement. seven complete for the judgment of the dead as an assurance, three angels' messages. And the eighth is for the fourth and fifth angel, Revelation 14, that joins the third angel. And the 12th parabolic hour, that's your eighth movement. So the last three parabolic hours contain two prophetic movements. That's that of the fourth group, the Seventh-day Adventist Church mentioned in Matthew 20, verse 5. They were the ninth hour call. And the 11th hour call, which is the kingdom of everlasting kingdom of heaven, which is run by the kingdom of David. And typical David, that's the fifth group of laborers called in Matthew 20, verse 6. So the fourth group, the Adventists, were called in Matthew 20, verse 5, and the fifth group was called in Matthew 20, verse 6. And those two were joined together in the last three parabolic hours, which was the 10th, 11th, and the 12th hours, respectively. And we're in the 12th hour now. So the time for the Adventists, the fourth group of laborers, are already over. That ended in 2003. At the end of 2003, that's when the fourth group of laborers came to their end. The closing work for the Adventist Church took place at Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas, 2002 to 2003. It was a whole year for the closing work to actually be accomplished. Okay, it says, besides this vivid illustration, inspiration through the prophet, Daniel reveals that the sanctuary is to be cleansed not only from sinners, but from doctrinal error, too, for one angel inquired. Daniel 8:13-14:17. How long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice? And the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host be trodden underfoot. And he said unto me, under 2,300 days then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Understand, O Son of Man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. For the daily, the desolation, also the sanctuary and the host pertain both to the doctrines and the people. Both are to be cleansed, and the angel explained that the cleansing of the sanctuary, cleansing it from both error and hypocrisy, takes place after the 2,300 days. And I'll say after the 2,300 days met their fulfillment, starting in 1844. That's, when you say fulfillment, you mean it means to establish and put into operation what the 2,300 days termination produced. At the end of the 2,300 days, it produced the movement of the judgment of the dead and of the living. The two phases of the judgment had its beginning in 1844 by the announcement of the 2,300 day prophecy meeting its fulfillment. So it says, moreover, through the prophet Zechariah, Yahweh makes another remarkable illustration which points out that the saints themselves also are to be cleansed. Zechariah 3:1-5. And he showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of Yahweh, and Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. And Yahweh said unto Satan, Yahweh rebuked thee, O Satan, even the Yahweh that hath chosen Jerusalem rebuked thee. Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? Now Joshua was clothed with the filthy garments and stood before the angel. And he answered and spake unto those that stood before him, saying, take away the filthy garments from him. And unto him he said, behold, I have caused thine iniquity to pass from thee, and I will clothe thee with change of raiment. And I said, let them set a fair matter upon his head. So they set a fair matter upon his head and clothed him with garments, and the angel of Yahweh stood by. What are these garments? These garments are pointed out in the latter rain of truth that falls with the former rain in the first month, starting the beginning of the harvest. First, you have to have a cleansing. You have to have a judgment, beginning with the angel men for the house, before you can start bringing forth of the harvest. That started in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, at the Gilead Center. While we have already seen that the house of Yahweh is to be cleansed from error and from hypocrites, here in Zechariah's prophecy, we see that the saints themselves are cleansed from their sins, their filthy garments are taken away, and clean and beautiful garments are given in their place. This phase of the cleansing is again illustrated by the wedding garment, Matthew 22:11. And now let me remind you that after tares are taken away, the wheat is not left on the field where it grew. That is, the saints are not left where they were, but it is put into the barn. Now let's read that again. I think they use the wrong preposition here, Vikihara. That on is the wrong preposition. It says it is, and now let me remind you that after tares are taken away, now remember the tares are pulled up by the root. They're not cut off at the root level of the ground. They are pulled up, root and all, but the wheat is cut off at the base of the ground, leaving the roots in the ground. That's the difference in your harvest. The reason you pull the tares up by the roots, you don't want them coming back next year and growing up again. So when the tares are pulled up at the last harvest, that means that you won't ever have any more tares in the church because they're pulled up by the root. Okay, so it says, and now let me remind you that after tares are taken away, the wheat is not left in the field. Vikihara used that preposition on, but the tares are pulled up by the root and left in the field and bundles. And then the wheat is gone and harvested. And then after the wheat is harvested, they go back and burn the bundles of tares that are left on the field. But the wheat is harvested with the sickle and is not left in the field. Okay. Furthermore, after the bad fish, hypocrites, are cast out, the good fish, the saints, are then put into the vessel, are not left in the net, not left in the place where the cleansing occurred. Consequently, when the church is thus cleansed, the saints are removed from their former place and put in a safe place away from all worldly influences and environments. Having been cleansed, they are necessarily thus kept clean. And where is that place? The Revelator has the answer. Revelation 14:1-5. And I looked, and lo, a Lamb stood on the Mount Sion, and with him 144,000. Why does it say the Lamb? Because Yahshua is still depicted as a Lamb that is furnishing blood for the saints on a daily basis. That's for the cleansing of their sins, to purify them. Having his Father's name written in their forehead. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgin. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto Yahweh and unto the Lamb. And in their mouth is found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of Yahweh. The cleansed ones you see are the 144,000, and they are taken unto Mount Sion. Plainly then, the cleansing is in two sections. For the 144,000 godless saints who are sealed from among the tribes of Israel, Revelation 7:4-7, the church, are but the first fruits. They are taken unto Mount Sion. Finally, after the purification or cleansing of the church has taken place, then the great multitude of Revelation 7:9 are gathered out of all nations. For they constitute the second fruits, where there is no second, there can be no first. Where is Mount Zion? Let Micah the prophet tell us. Micah 3:12-4:1-2. Therefore shall Zion for your sake be plowed as a field, and Yerushalayim shall become heaps, and the mountain of the house as the high places of the forest. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Yahweh shall be established on the top of the mountain, and it shall be exalted by the hills, and people shall flow unto it. And many nations shall come and say, come and let us go up unto the mountain of the Yahweh, and unto the house of Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his path. For the Lord shall go forth to Zion, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. This is inspiration's own explanation of the place which the purified church is to occupy. Here we are told that though the ancient kingdom, the Jewish, whose place stood on Mount Zion, was to be demolished from the foundation up, we are nevertheless at the same time promised that the kingdom will be restored in the last days, and that it will be exalted above all other kingdoms, above all mountains and hills. Again, says the Yahshua, Ezekiel 36:23-25, and I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which you have profaned in the midst of them, and the heathen shall know that I am the Yahweh, saith the Yeshua Messiah, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen, and get you out of all countries, and will bring you into your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. We are here told that the final cleansing of the saints, the cleansing that removes all the marks of sin, is performed after Yahweh takes his people from among the heathen and from all countries and brings them into their own land. Ezekiel 36:26, a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh. When the saints get to the promised land, then the sin indulgent heart, the stony heart, is taken away, and a heart of righteous desires, a fleshly heart, is given. No longer will Elohim's people fight temptation from within in order to do righteousness. Unto them, in the period of the fleshly heart, it will be natural to do righteousness, whereas now, during the period of the stony heart, it is natural to do unrighteousness. Ezekiel 36:27. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. The Spirit of Yahweh, moreover, will be freely given unto the saints, and thus will they become perfect eternal beings, perfectly capable of walking in Yahweh's statutes and judgment. Ezekiel 36:28, and you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Elohim. They are to dwell not in some other land, said Yahweh, but in their own land, and the land he had anciently given unto their fathers. They are to dwell in Palestine. Now you plainly see that the unconverted Jews who are endeavoring to take the land of Palestine are not the people of whom these passages of Scripture speak. Now you see that Arab, Jew, or Gentile, all will eventually have to move away and give room to the Elohim's clean and purified people. Joel 3:1-2, for behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. You have it stated as plain as it can be that when Elohim brings back the captivity of his people, then he will gather all nations in the valley of Jehoshaphat and plead for his people for his second fruits after he takes the first fruits on the Mount Zion. Isaiah 2:3, and many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. Joel 3:20-21. But Judah shall dwell forever in Jerusalem from generation to generation, for I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for Yahweh dwelleth in Zion. Thus will the saints be enabled to live eternally. Isaiah 33:24. And the inhabitant shall not say, I am sick. The people that dwell therein shall be forgiven their iniquity. And what else will be said after the people are gathered and cleansed? Or just this, Revelation 22:11. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still. And he which is filthy, let him be filthy still. And he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still. If you have learned how to become holy here in this life, where we're at now, then you will graduate still in this life into perfect holiness in the kingdom of heaven that is set up here on earth without any problem. If you will start practicing it now, how to become righteous, then you can dwell in this presence when he does finally appear. Jeremiah 20, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, we are not saved. The land moreover shall be divided among the tribes, but not as divided anciently. Time will not permit me to read the whole account of the division, but here I have it reproduced in a map, which shows that the land has never been thus divided. Each tribe is to get a full length strip from the east to the west. The portion of Dan is the first on the north, and the portion of Gad is the last on the south. In chapters 47-48 of Ezekiel, you will find a full description of this division of the land. Furthermore, the land itself shall be cleansed, for says the Yahweh, Ezekiel 38:14-16, and Ezekiel 39:4, and verse 7 and 9-14. Therefore, son of man, prophesy unto Gog. Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, in that day, when my people of Israel dwelleth safely, shall thou not know it, and thou shalt come up against my people of Israel, as a cloud to cover the land, it shall be in the latter days, and I will bring thee against my land, that the heathen may know me when I shall be sanctified in thee, O God, before their eyes. Thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and all thy bands, and the people that is with thee. I will give thee unto the ravenous birds of every sort, and unto the beast of the field to be devoured. And so will I bring my holy name, and so will I make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel, and I will not let them pollute my holy name any more. And the heathen shall know, that's your Gentiles that are left behind, shall know that I am the Yahweh, the Holy One in Israel. And that's also the Seventh-day Adventist Church spiritual Israel that has been cut off, represented by the tares, and the 144,000 represented by the wheat separated from their midst. They're also in that cluster of Gentile heathen, the non-believers that wouldn't be converted to the kingdom. And they that dwell in the cities of Israel shall go forth and shall sit on fire and burn the weapons, both the shields and the bucklers, the bows, and the arrows, and the hand staves, and the spears, and they shall burn them with fire 7 years, so that they shall take no wood out of the field, neither cut down any out of the forest, for they shall burn their weapons with fire, and they shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob those that rob them, saith Yahweh Elohim. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give unto Gog a place there of the graves in Israel, the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea, and they shall stop the noses of the passengers, and there shall they bury Gog and all his multitude, and they shall call it the valley of Hammon Gog. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be bearing of them, that they may cleanse the land, yea, all the people of the land shall bury them, and it shall be unto them a renown, the day that I shall be glorified, saith Yahweh Elohim. And they shall sever out men of continual employment, passing through the land, to bury with his passengers those that remain upon the face of the earth, to cleanse it. After the end of 7 months shall they search. Still further, you will now note that all these wonders Elohim does for his people, not because they have been good or because they are now good, but for Elohim's own great name. Listen to what Yahshua himself said, Ezekiel 36:22-24. Therefore say unto the house of Israel, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for mine holy name's sake, which you have profaned among the heathen, whither you went. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which you have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Yahweh, saith Yahweh Elohim, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen, and get you out of all countries, and will bring you into your own land. According to this, Elohim restores the land unto his chosen people, not because they as a people are good, but because he wants to vindicate his own name among the heathen. As the time approaches for the cleansing to take place, a call for the spiritual awakening will be made. Isaiah 52:1. It says, "Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion." This is the house of David now he's addressing here. The tribe of Judah, okay, the lawgiver, Genesis 49:10. O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth there shall no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Inspiration here declares that after this call for revival and reformation, from then on the sinners will not be permitted to have any part among the people that have been cleansed. The prophet Nahum too is a witness of this call for reformation. He writes, Nahum 1:15, "Behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee." He is utterly cut off. Here you see that the announcement of this long-expected event is to be made by someone's publication. Moreover, he publishes peace, and thus announces the restoration of the kingdom. This is the only peace that the world can have. There is to be no other. Those who keep Elohim's solemn feast and perform their vows shall have this peace. None other shall. In our study today, we have summarized some of the things which will take place during the time of the end, but the most important thing so far, as you are concerned, is the decision you are now left to make. That's the most important. Okay, that brings us to the end of our study for this hour. And so, folks, that's a lot of information about these latter-day events that are to culminate in the purification of the house of Yahweh and restored back unto their own land and the land of Israel. This brings us to the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. It's number 11. Click on our audio archives. Hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. Wonderful Words of Life. Send them over again to me. Wonderful Words of Love, let me more of their beauty see. Wonderful Words of Love, Words of Love, their beauty, teach me faith and duty. Beautiful Words, Wonderful Words, Wonderful Words of Love. Beautiful words, wonderful words, wonderful words of love. Just what the Blessed One gives to all, wonderful words of love. Centerless to the loving child, wonderful words of love. Oh, so freely given, moving us to heaven. Beautiful words, wonderful words, wonderful words of love. Beautiful words, wonderful words, wonderful words of love. Sweetly echo the gospel call, wonderful words of love. Offer pardon and peace to all, wonderful words of love. Gospel only Savior, sanctify forever. Beautiful words, wonderful words, wonderful words of love. Beautiful words, wonderful words, wonderful words of love.